Good morning and welcome to this full Wednesday of machine learning. Sorry for the first 5 minutes. And with us today we have James Avery, who's in the computing part of the Niels Bohr Institute. And he and I will talk about long short-term memory and the idea of a recurrent neural network. So I will quickly bring up week 3 long short-term memories here. And the let me share and simply start. Share. Can everybody see the slides?
Certainly that.
All right. Okay, so let's start by a problem rather than a solution. So a lot of data manifests itself in the form of a time series. So here you might be getting, weather reports or stock prices or whatever in a time sequence. And now you want to estimate the next value in the series or the next couple of values in the series. That could also be text, speech, stock prices, so on. And that's not really a problem that fits well into a basic tree or forward neural network paradigm. So that requires special attention. You know, what do you do? Well, for example, the number of inputs changes with time. And may not be fixed. And another problem is, what if you have something that's not necessarily like a continuous time series, but just some number of events in time, but not a fixed number of events in time, and you have to predict the overall outcome of this. Again, it doesn't have a fixed input. So how do you deal with that? Can you even machine learn that? And the answer is yes. So let's start by recalling the recurrent neural network. So here we have the normal feed-forward neural network where you have hidden layers and so on. And you start with a fixed number of inputs and then you get to an output. Here is a recurrent neural network where not only do you spit out predictions, but you also can re-put in new inputs and sort of distribute them between the different nodes. And so in answer to the question from before, the answer is a recurrent neural network that looks much like this. And if we unfold that, then it looks like this. So you come with a state, which to begin with is nothing. Perhaps you know nothing. And you're given numbers at time t minus one. And then you calculate two things. A prediction. And this is a sort of a neural network in the ordinary sense, you could say, more or less ordinary sense. You give a prediction and you also say, but I'm not just going to throw away all that I calculated here. I'm also going to send on a hidden state to the next node. And so when the next x at time t comes, well, it mixes the hidden state with the input again and say, I'm going to come out with a prediction and I'm going to continue with the state here. And then it just continues that way. All right, so what's inside that box? Well, here are a few more things about it. So if we look into this, then we have the new features coming in at all times. And we have a cell state up here. And then we have this hidden state, which also contains the predictions. So it sends out the hidden state afterwards, or parts of it, the part you're interested in. And it also sends on information. So this is what it looks like. And then you might say, well, that looks a little like my ordinary network, but not entirely. Well, let's dive into it. So The cell state is continued above. And what are these operators? Well, this is actually a vector multiplication and a vector addition. So that's actually a simple part. And what does it do? Well, given an input and a hidden state, it has a so-called forget gate. It says, which part of my cell state should I forget and which should I continue to have? And this is useful if you, for example, live in a changing environment. So for example, the weather, you would say, all right, well, from summer to winter, the environment changes. And so there are parts of the state which it doesn't help to know what the weather was last winter in order to predict the summer. You want to forget some of those parts. And well, the information is also fed to the input gate, which is like a normal neural network, and it has the sort of a hyperbolic tangent or another type of sigmoid type function. And by this, you, well, multiply those two and add it with the cell state. And finally, it has an output gate, which says, all right, with the cell state and the input I have, let's predict a new, well, make a prediction and send the information on to the next of these. And in here, they are just like a tree and an ordinary neural network, a lot of weights to be optimized. So, and then just before I continue to the optimization, there's also something called a gated recurrent unit. And I would say, the recurrent neural network was invented simply because, well, in theory, you could make it this way and wasn't really clear what you could use it for. And the recurrent neural network in its simplest form was, I would say, limited because it had training problems and all sorts of things. With the LSTM, this setup became really good at making predictions into time or next in a sequence. What turned out, it was that this was perhaps an overly advanced type of cell. So it was simplified. And I mean, this is, I don't know, James, what is that? 6 years ago that this was invented, something like that. An Asian guy who said, well, let's do this simpler. And well, these are the two basic sort of infrastructures for this type. And well, overall, I would say the blog, which is very well respected and that we've referred to before called Towards Data Science, they have a quite good quote. Almost all state-of-the-art results based on recurrent neural networks are achieved with these two networks. So I would say that's for all, well, for most things you can think about, they will be doing what they're supposed to do. And then yet the answer is, of course, new things arrive on the horizon. And that's also part of what James will be talking about. And then you might say, where can I know something about them? Well, here's a link for the nice explanations of LSTM and GRUB from exactly Towards Data Science. And then, yeah, let's shortly pause there and let me ask if you have any questions or comments at this point. No hands. Yeah, Sophus. All right. Well, let me go back to sharing. Yeah. So the question is, what are all these different things? Well, let's go up here. And yeah, so XT is the observation, the input features at time T. So that's what you feed it at every time step. You know, what's the latest information? Based on that, please update your prediction. And then there's a hidden state and a cell state. And to some extent, for simplicity, you could almost see those as what did I get from last time? Things that were not part of the prediction. And the cell state is typically to contain something about an environment, whereas the hidden state is just all sorts of information that helps you in the predictions. And so all sorts of information from previous along with the input is used to both say, well, what should I predict for the next one through this part, the input and the output, and also what should I forget? And that refers to the long short-term memory, because sometimes you don't want to base, for example, you don't want to base a weather prediction on the weather from more than, you know, a week or maybe 2 weeks ago. You want to forget that part because it has no relevance for your prediction. You will only have it as noise. And that's what the top part does. So all of these C's and H are numbers that you should, in fact, probably not see. This you should see because this is your input data and hence quite important. And you should, of course, have looked at it in detail, ensured that it makes sense and so on. And here is the predictions coming out. And of course, you're going to look at those as well. And then it continues sending on, you know, a cell state and a hidden state, which you won't see, or unless you dig very deep into it. Yeah. All right. We'll explain the exact architecture of the cells later, or should we read up on those on the blog post? I would generally say read up on the blog post because, well, you can get into quite deep discussions. But in general, the architecture is exactly what I showed here. So, and James, you're welcome to comment on architecture. We'll see expanding architecture in the next talk by James. What do you do if your time sequence is just one variable? For example, if you have a variable which is an audio file and then some other variables that are single valued. All right. Share again. This is your input. It may be just one variable, right? Maybe a single number that comes in. And then say, you know, this is your monthly income, just one number. And this is how's my economy going on a scale from 0 to 1. It could be that simple. And as we'll see in the small exercise, that's exactly, as simple as it gets. It can also be very complex, like the weather forecast, right? That's, these are big vectors. All right, I think I'll continue and then we'll take a few questions at the end, but also move on to a short poll and a break and James. Something we haven't talked a lot about is backpropagation. I've mentioned it before, but no harm in recalling what it does. So this is how we modify the neural network weights to minimize the error. This is, you know, the training. So that the output gets better and better compared to the target value. And backpropagation, we do this gradient descent. We say, all right, we take the derivative of the improvement with respect to all the weights, and then we move in the direction of where the improvement direction is the best. And the length of the step we take is the learning rate, which can be both too small, we approach too slowly, or too big, we jumped over the minimum we wanted to find. Here's the usual way of doing it, right? You make a prediction, you compare to the expected, and you calculate the derivative with respect to that, and then you adjust the weights in that direction. And of course, we don't do it per event. What we do is we do it for a batch of training cases, because if we read in, say, 1,000 events and make 1,000 predictions and then get the overall gradient, then we hope that the batch is big enough that we that we don't succumb to statistical fluctuations, but you know that those are small. And it's illustrated here. For example, if you have a neural network here, and here's weight in layer 2 on node 2 leading to node in the next layer 2. So that's weight 222. All right, well, you want to update that according to the learning rate and the derivative. And well, what's the derivative? Well, that's calculated through here. There's a lot of chain rule in it. And then, hey, that should converge towards the value you want. And I think backpropagation, if this doesn't sort of ring a bell still, then there's a blog describing it here and actually a video describing it here that I just relate to. Now, what about for the LSTM? Well, here you have to do backpropagation through time. So here the weights are modified by unrolling all the input steps. So instead of this, you know, circular step, you unroll it like I showed, or unfold it like I showed you before. And then you actually have to go through, then the backpropagation also becomes a backpropagation through time. And so each sort of recurrent neural network step may be seen as an additional layer. Now, you do much of the same as you do up. You just have to unroll and calculate all the way through, and then roll it up and repeat and update the weights. And the problem with this is that it can become quite lengthy, and for that reason, there are also truncated backpropagation through time. And the smart thing about backpropagation in general is that even, you know, this weight down here feels the entire network. So even parts that it doesn't participate in directly, well, through the backpropagation, it also feels that, but if I update in this direction now, then things improve here because of another weight over here. All right, and just to finish off by giving a short status of LSTMs. OpenAI actually in 2018 trained an LSTM to do sort of a robot hand manipulation, and it really got far into the skill of performing things with hands. And here, not only did you have a loss function as to how well it did, but it also had a policy. So you can write your loss function with a policy. That's of course way beyond the scope of this course. Actually LSTMs can beat you in StarCraft 2. And that was seen as, you know, quite a move in it. So, and there are quite a few use cases, and before we move to all of those, I actually want you to, well, let's try to launch a poll. Please fill in and think about the questions. And we'll do this for approximately 2.5 minutes, I think. Yeah, we're starting to get votes. All right. We're at more than half. We're also in the last 30 seconds. All right, 10 more seconds. Will we get to 40 voters? Nope. Let's end here. And let me share the results. Okay, so can trees and neural networks be used for solving problems which do not have a fixed number of input features? And it is true, it's mostly the third answer. This is really hard. It can be done. Let's say that the maximum number of input features is 200, but that it varies. Well, then you could give it the first input features and then just feed it zeros for the rest. It's an ugly solution, but it can be done. But, you know, normally we want a fixed number of input features when we build a sort of basic tree or neural network. In the next one, I want it to be a bit tricky. Which do you think works best? Either produce a single but rather extensive machine learning algorithm, or make two algorithms which run consecutively, where one produces good input variables for the second one. And actually, it turns out that A is correct. The reason why A is a good point is both that we have large computing power, but the backpropagation part. See, if you have two networks, then the first one doesn't know about what is necessarily good in the second one. And so the weights of the first network does not benefit from the backpropagation of what the one getting the final answer gets out. So actually, the once you start dividing it, you make it probably more complicated. And then there's also the thing about, you know, if you every time you need to retrain one and then make predictions, feed it into another and then retrain that, that becomes cumbersome. So A is actually, the first answer is correct, but it's not the only one that is correct. Okay, you answered the second one a lot because of the backpropagation. Yeah, also because simply of simplicity and simpleness. The first answer is also good. Modulizing a problem, I would say, admittedly, that often has advantages. It might not be possible because the two parts are connected, but if you can modulize the two and somehow know that you don't lose a lot of information in the process, that's actually a good one too. And that's the answer at the end, which you also put. All right, cool. And then Joachim says, if you put in zero in the inputs, will it not bias these connections to mess up whatever output there is? And the answer is, well, if you have enough data, it will learn that when it zero pads, it's just because there isn't that input. So, no, it can learn that. As I said, it's ugly, but learn. All right. I think we should just take 5 minutes of shaking our hands and legs and go get coffee or more coffee or tea, whatever you drink. And then James will start in 5 minutes. Does that sound good, James?
That sounds excellent.
All right.
So see you guys in 5 minutes.
Yep, 10 minutes too. I'll get a cup of tea as well. Alrighty. 10-2, and I can see James just left, but there he is.
Back again. I'll
simply leave it to you, James. Yeah. And we're aiming at another 30 to 35 minutes, I take it.
Mm-hmm. And just a quick microphone check. Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Excellent. Yes. All right. Hello. And just plea to ask you to bear with me a little bit. This is my first time lecturing on Zoom and the first time teaching about this material. So if it's a little bit rough around the edges, please forgive it. And if you have questions, just do them in the chat, which I will find. Okay. Chat is gone. So then if you have questions, I will answer them. I will gather them in the break when the chat is back. So I'm going to tell a little bit about a different kind of recurrent neural network. So Truls is right that most state-of-the-art work is done with some form of long short-term memory machines or GRUs because they are extremely powerful. But the trouble with very powerful systems is that it comes with the price of being computationally expensive and complicated to work with sometimes. So recurrent neural networks in their general form are extraordinarily expressive. In fact, they are so expressive that if you define them in the right way, they become what's called Turing complete, which means that they can express every computable function. And as every computer scientist knows, as a system becomes more and more expressive, the computational cost associated with it becomes more and more expensive. And as you approach Turing computability, Turing completeness, working with it becomes uncomputable. That is that you end up in a situation where there provably exists no computer program that can solve the system reliably. The way that we use recurrent neural networks in practice, they are not Turing complete, but they are still very expressive, and with it comes large training costs, and sometimes its training even fails. So Truls showed you the back propagation through time, which is just like if you have a computer program unfolding the loop, unrolling it so that you, instead of having a loop that goes around, you take each step and make it a long string of steps. So that gives static but very deep networks. And if you have unboundedly long sequences, that gives you unboundedly deep networks and exploding training times. So optimization becomes extremely resource intensive. Then you also have the other problems that are common to neural networks that you're not sure that you can find a global minimum. You might just end up in a local minimum, of which there can be many. But recurrent neural networks have an extra problem that static feedforward networks don't have. And that is bifurcations in the state space. And it comes from this trying to train the recurrent weights. So what are state space bifurcations? It's most easy to understand it when we look at the simplest recurrent neural network that we can imagine, just one variable and an activation function. So we have a variable x, and in each step, we multiply by some number, add a bias, and take the activation. Now, if we look at the how it goes over time, you might reach a fixed point. And the fixed points you can divide into attractors, which is points for which if you have a small numerical error, you get pushed back to the fixed point, or repellers where a small being just a little bit away from it means that you get pushed away. So I've shown the repellers with dotted line here and the attractors with solid lines. So in this case here, if we have, for example, W is 0.7 and 0.01 bias, basically no matter where we start out, we end up at this attractive fixed point with W at 1.5 and a zero bias. We have a repelling fixed point at zero. So that means that if you are at zero, you stay at zero. But if you're just a tiny little bit away from it, you get pushed out to one of these attractive fixed points. And with a negative W, you have oscillation that can either be attractive or repulsive. So bifurcations happen when the attractors split. So here we see what the gradient descent algorithm would see. That is, if we're trying to optimize the system to find the best W and B, here we see the fixed point associated with B ranging from minus 0 to 2 for various values of W. And here we see for W rating from minus 1 to 6 for various values of the bias B. And what happens is that you have some a continuous part where the fixed point is attractive, and then it switches over to a repulsive part and then becomes attractive again. And in this repulsive part, we get pushed away into to get to to the nearest attractive part. But what we're seeing here is that the attractive fixed point at this stage gets split into two attractive ones and a repulsive one. And if you are then in your gradient descent optimizing this system, at this point it's like a discontinuity which leads to an infinitely large gradient, or since you're doing it numerically, just a very, very large gradient that can destroy your whole optimization. So you've been churning along, computing and getting better and better, and suddenly, boom, all dead. So that's a problem that means that you can go from having a super good solution, and then suddenly you get nonsense. The equistate networks, which I'll talk about today, is a way of trying to instead of making things more and more powerful, we make them less powerful in a controlled way so that they are still strong enough to do the things that we want to do, but in a way where we can ensure that we can always get a solution deterministically. We can get it fast, and we don't have these problems that can lead to things just not working at all. So the general situation is, so for totally general recurrent neural networks, we can get them to be basically as powerful as we want them to be, as we have resources to make them, basically. But it also means that the training time can be prohibitively large, and also that they have many ways for which the training actually fails. I mean, where it's just not possible to train them. The long short-term memory machines are restricted in a way that makes them less expressive than the general RNN, but still extremely strong. They don't have some of the problems of the general recurrent networks, but they still have the problems of not necessarily finding the global optimum. They have the bifurcations in the training state space, and the convergence can fail. And they're extremely expensive to train. So some of the problems that we'll see later, the trying to do it with an LSTM took close to a week, and 10 minutes with an ESM. And some took about an hour with an LSTM and a few seconds with an ESM. ESM get around all of this by not needing to use a gradient descent for optimization at all. So it ends up being just a linear system that can be solved in one shot. There's nothing to converge, so it doesn't have convergence problems, and you have a deterministic solution. There's just one minimum. But of course, it isn't possible to get as good as you theoretically could with an LSTM. But then it often, in practice, can be possible to get much better results than you do with an LSTM, because you always get to the theoretical optimum, whereas with the LSTM, sometimes you just end up in a local minimum. The idea is that the dangerous part of a recurrent neural network is the recurrent part. So that's where the power, but also the difficulties lie. And with the ESM, instead of optimizing everything, you have the recurrent part constructed in a way so that it is static, it doesn't change, but it's constructed in a way that allows some dynamics to happen, so that you only need to optimize the output layer, the W out here. And that means that you just end up with a linear system, and you can solve that in the end by just solving a least squares problem. So the trick will be to construct the WN and the transformation of the hidden variables in a way that keeps the enough of the computational strength without making but still avoiding needing to optimize it. The metaphor that I'd like to think you should think about for this is this really fun experiment that Fernando and co-workers did back in 2003. It was a paper called Pattern Recognition in a Bucket. And what they did was that they had essentially a bucket of water, a loudspeaker that would make waves in the water, and a camera set on top. And they were able to use this training of the water. So what they had was just a feed-forward network output on top of from the picture of the water to the output. And they were able to get much better results than were possible in general with static feed-forward networks. And why is that? It's because for speech recognition and audio. And why is that? It's because the water was a reservoir where the waves have information both about the current state and preceding states. So the way long short-term memory machines work is that you have some weights and sigmoids that control the remembering and forgetting. in this case, that's sort of sitting in the medium, the water. You have most information about things that happen locally in time and space. But it all gets mixed in a way that attenuates over time. So things that are far apart are less strongly connected, but it all, the information all seeps through. And that allows you to look both back in time and to have stronger information about things that happened recently. So how do we construct a matrix here in the hidden, how do we construct a hidden space that has these properties? Well, one thing is that we need there to be sort of a locality conditions, things that things should be connected in a way where they affect neighborhoods more quickly than things that are far apart, but you still need everything to gradually propagate to everywhere. So we let the hidden matrix be sparse but connected. That means that that there is a path from every hidden variable to every other hidden variable in the graph for the matrix. But the sparsity means that every hidden variable gets sort of a neighborhood. So you affect neighbors more quickly than others, but the information ends up flowing to everywhere. As a bonus, because it is sparse, it means that when we apply it in the update stage, it is a linear operation instead of quadratic operation. And in general, we want all of these operations to be linear time so that we can do things very fast. The slightly more tricky part, actually it's not so tricky, but the mathematics is a little bit heavier, is that the long-term effects of the recurrence on the hidden space is controlled by the eigenvalues of the matrix. So those of you who you should all have had linear algebra, I suppose. So you know that you can decompose everything into eigenvectors, and the eigenvalues of the operator or the matrix control how each part of the space grows. So you need it to have a spectral radius close to one. If it's much bigger than one, it explodes. Actually, because of the sigmoid, it can be a little bit, because of the activation, it can be a little bit bigger than one, so that because it can get squished back. But you want the general effect of applying the matrix to be bounded. So you don't want things to explode. And if it's the spectral radius is too small, then it dies out. So you want to have it close to one so that the information sort of, that the water squishes back and forth, but doesn't die out too quick. So you can think of the spectral radius, which by the way is the size of the largest eigenvalue. It's a little bit like the viscosity of the fluid. So if it's too low, it just dies out. And if it's very high, then it stays for a long time. So the main good property of equistate networks is that they can be trained extremely efficiently. So instead of gradient descent, which can fail for a number of reasons, you can do it in a single least squares calculation. So you can see it like this. If we recall this little bit, usually we let psi be the identity and phi be a hyperbolic tangent or something like that. And then the output becomes W out applied to XT, where that's the input concatenated with the current state. And if we apply that to a sequence, then we can write that as a big matrix X, and then pose the minimization problem as finding the W that minimizes the distance. And this can just be done with a least squares computation, which is deterministic. It always has a unique result, and it can be done extremely fast. So an example that you will be working on for the exercises is the Mackey-Glass sequence, which is a good sequence to sort of test that everything is working as it should. It makes something that looks periodic, but is actually chaotic. So it has some near periodicity, but tweaking the parameters slightly changes things dramatically over time. And here you see it with, let's start here. So here you see the result for a network that was trained 500 steps earlier. So the LSTM is so heavy that it's that you cannot really train it online. That means that you cannot train it as you go along. And here we see the result of one that was trained 500 steps earlier, and the same with an EchoState network. And even though the LSTM is, they have the same number of hidden variables, and the LSTM should be stronger, it isn't able to really get it, and probably because we weren't able to get to the global minimum. But what really shines is because you can train it by just doing the least squares optimization, which can be done in less than a second usually. We can do that moving along so that we optimize the network and predict together. So this is trained just before the sequence starts and gets it, you see, two orders of magnitude better than the LSTM. I think we should have a break. So first I'm going to stop sharing and then see if I can regain the chat. There we go. And see if we have questions. Oh, well.
The only question there was actually was how a GRU would score on the demo you had. And I gave my version, but you're welcome to comment on that.
Yeah, mostly very strong. Right, and it also avoids vanishing gradients. And right. And it can have bifurcations, and it should, let's see, now yeah.
But I would say.
I think it sounds exactly right.
Okay, thanks. Then, cool. And Jonathan, the slides are on week 3 as always.
Yeah, and I don't know, Truls, should we do a little bit of breakout where the students can discuss and then maybe there might be some questions after the break.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. So we will make a small breakout session of another, well, we'll make it 10 minutes, but it's also meant for you as a sort of a bit of a break, but spend at least 5 minutes discussing what type of problem that you think these networks could be useful. And I think with the echo networks and especially the speed of them, you know, this is a case where if data is coming in at very high rate, so you cannot retrain an LSTM at every time step. You know, this is the place to be. But I'm going to make breakout sessions now, and we're going to go for 16 rooms. Yeah, 15 rooms. Cool. Talk to you in 10 minutes. So that's 25 minutes past. And remember also to take a break.
See you soon. Og Troels, hvordan, jeg har ikke rigtig prøvet det her, for hvordan gør man med breakout rooms? Nu kan jeg simpelthen invitere mig. Går vi som lærer ind og siger hej, eller skal vi bare lade dem
du går ind og siger hej og joiner.
Ja.
Du går bare prik til dem og høre.
Ja, okay.
Welcome back. We're just waiting a moment because the breakout rooms, whenever I say stop breakout rooms, it makes a countdown of 1 minute, and I'd forgotten about that. So we have another minute to go, 30 seconds.
Hvornår var det, vi startede igen?
In 20 seconds.
Okay, can we do 2 minutes instead? Then I can quickly make a bathroom run.
Yep.
See you.
All right. While James is away, I think we should start the discussion anyhow. So, yeah, any comments, ideas, questions about the idea of a long short-term memory? Please just burst in and speak.
I didn't really get the disadvantages of the echo network. It seems like it can't describe as complicated things, but can you give examples in like where is the boundary of what it can do?
That's a super good question, which I think James will be better at answering. I think overall the answer is yes, it can't do super complicated things, and most of those would be things that are highly non-linear. But he knows a lot better. James, we already have a questions for you.
Great. Yes.
Christopher, will you repeat?
Yeah, it was a question on the disadvantages of the echo network. It seems that it can't do like as complicated stuff as this, like as it is generally linear. But can you give an example on where is the boundary? At which point do you like go into a more advanced type of network?
It's always tricky with quantifying how expressive these networks are. You can, because quite often you can by giving them more resources, you can make them more and more expressive. So you can actually get echo state networks to be quite strong if you make the hidden space large enough. There is a universality result that I will find, and then Tord can post it afterwards. So this whole business of quantifying, of classifying how strong different networks are, is a rather difficult field. It's not so that they can just do linear stuff. That's the thing. The thing is, you're optimizing the linear map from the hidden space to the output, but inside the hidden space is you have the recurrence going on. So even though you're not optimizing the recurrence, what you're giving it is a recurrency relation that has properties that make it possible to do quite complicated things. You'll see later that they are able to do a fair bit of stuff. So why do I then say that the LSTM are stronger? They are stronger in the sense that they can more directly encode complicated behavior if you are able to optimize them to find the best solution. One other use of echo state networks is to train more general recurrent neural networks That is, if you first get the best echo state network, then you can, after that, use a gradient descent or something like that to optimize the recurrent part, and then get an even stronger thing. And that sometimes gets out of situations where you can't get a proper optimization of the recurrent one by getting close to it.
If I may comment here,
yeah.
Very generally,
yeah.
It turns out that the actually a lot of problems don't need very complicated things, and that nice. Linear solutions, for the most part, will do most of the work, which is exactly what the echo network is doing. I see that Simon has a hand up, and also that...
I just want to make one final quick comment for that. Yeah, and that is that it's actually a general strategy in a lot of physics to deal with non-linearity by increasing the dimension. You can think of your work with Hilbert spaces, where you linearize something that's very complex, but then you end up with something that's very high dimensional. It's not exactly the same, but the analogy is similar, that you go to a very high dimensional hidden space where complicated things happen. And that allows you to capture actually rather complicated behavior. Okay, sorry, next one.
Simon?
Yeah, we just came up with two questions during the breakout rooms.
Yeah.
One is about combining time series and static values. So we talked about an example of using like monitor, hard monitor, trying to predict long incidents in patients. Isn't that something that Microsoft did? But can you combine like that time series? Can you have a neural network both consider the time series that it gets along with like an image that is like the an imaging of the lungs or something? I think because that is kind of, I would imagine that's quite different kinds of data. Does that cause problems to have that kind of?
So to understand you correctly, that what you're describing is something that has a time series and then something that's constant, or what was that?
Yeah, I guess that's actually it. So maybe that's so like, yeah.
A constant is also a time series, so you could just fit that in. I don't know if Truls, you have any insight.
I guess it's just, yeah. That's actually a fair point. I think it may be just more complicated than it sounded.
Yeah, I mean, whenever you have a time series and something that's constant, you can always just fit in the constant as part of it. You may set up the network so that you don't spend as much effort on the constant bit as you would if it were a general time series that could change. So that might make it useful to do something special. But if you don't do anything special, you can just treat it as if it's a time series that doesn't change. And your network should capture that. But because you know in advance that it's constant, you may save some processing time by doing something special. I think I would have to look at a particular example in paper to see what I would do. Tools, do you have any?
No. Actually, I have a much more practical echo state network. What? Where can you get the software?
Good question. We just wrote our own because it's super simple to do. That's another nice thing about the echo state network is that it is it's much less complicated than a lot of the fancy stuff.
should we then not agree that you and I somehow make sure that that code and a simple example, use case example, is shared?
Yeah, I think that we I think that's a good idea to have sort of a reference implementation that we can share on the website.
Okay, cool. We can talk about that during the exercises.
So the one that we're using is deeply embedded in a lot of big piece of software. But what I think it can be done in not very many lines of code, and I think that should be pulled out and so that people can just use that.
Cool. We can talk with Niklas surely also about that. Any other questions? Otherwise, I think we will end the session and take a good long break and then have a short exercise. Christopher?
Yeah, this is just a question on ADA, actually. What do I access computationally on ADA? Can I run multiple threads? Which possibilities do I have if I want to speed up some of my algorithms?
Can I have some context? So you want to run on something on ADA, and are you asking about this? So you know that the two systems on ADA, right? The DAC and the Moody, where the DAC you have Jupyter notebooks and you have a single machine, and then Moody you can do cluster computing stuff. But are you asking about what? Can you elaborate a bit on your question?
Yeah, you already got me, gave me a bit more knowledge there. I'm from Aarhus University, so I haven't dealt with
it. So if you look into ADA, then you can click on Jupyter, and then you can pick a lot of different notebook setups. And for this course, you would use the data science one, and then you're able to run things on the Copenhagen University computers in a quite easy way.
And we can talk more about that privately, Christopher. Mm-hmm. All right, any other questions? If not, then we will end this session, and I think we should reconvene 5 minutes to 11 in exercise. And you can see today's exercise, and it's a very short one, but also one where you need to dig a little to find code. I put two links for code, for actually implementing an LSTM, and there are code examples in those references. So use them at will, and we'll return 10:55. Stretch your legs and enjoy.